Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of September 2018. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are A Blaze of Floral Glory in Cathedral, The officers who lifted a bus off a man, and statue approved of murdered Jewess. So, can we have the story behind the first headline,
certainly,
please?
A blaze of floral glory in cathedral. Winchester is set for an early autumn boost, with the Cathedral Flower Festival expected to attract more than 10,000 people over the next few days. Illumination, a festival of flowers, runs from Wednesday, September the 5th to Sunday, transforming the great church into a blaze of colour. More than 100 people from the National Association of Flower Arrangement Societies have been involved setting up the event this week. This year's Flower Festival will feature a stunning array of flower arrangements inspired by the magnificent Winchester Bible, the largest and finest surviving 12th century English Bible. Visitors will be invited to immerse themselves in a riot of colour and admire a variety of flower arrangements evoking the Winchester Bible's exquisite illuminated initials and elaborate decorative schemes coloured with gold and lapis lazuli. The event is not held every year, as the last one was 3 years ago. A spokesman said, "People are coming from all over the country. Many people are interested in flower arranging on such a grand scale in a church." Returning to the festival is creative director Angela Turner. Having designed the cathedral's flower festival in 2013, she is a regular exhibitor at RHS Chelsea Flower Show and has won many of their highly coveted RHS gold medals. Canon Annabel Boyce, the cathedral's receiver general, said, "We are delighted to welcome Angela back to Winchester Cathedral for this year's Flower Festival. I have no doubt that Angela's skill and creativity will result in a truly unique and spectacular event. This year, our Flower Festival is inspired by the 12th century Winchester Bible, a medieval masterpiece and a national treasure. We look forward to seeing the exquisite decorative schemes within the Bible brought to life through the medium of flowers as we share the story of the Winchester Bible with visitors from far and wide. Ticket prices range from £7 to £12, with a variety of concessions available, including groups of 15 plus, and can be booked via Winchester Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. A full list of prices can be found on the website, and there's an array of fabulous decorations here in different parts of the cathedral, and the event looks quite spectacular.
Yes, and here's one of the more remarkable headlines this year: The Officers Who Lifted a Bus Off a Man. It sounds like a scene from a Hollywood blockbuster featuring the latest superhero, but a real-life drama which unfolded in Winchester saw two police officers save a man's life by lifting a bus and pulling him out from under the vehicle. PC Kika Way and Police Community Support Officer, that's PCSO Neil Parker, used their first aid skills and superhuman strength to prevent a tragedy. The dynamic duo are among a group of police officers to be recognised for their bravery and ingenuity. Chief Constable Olivia Pinkney presented them with accolades from the Royal Humane Society, as well as Chief Constable congratulations and commendations. The Chief Constable said, "We work every day to protect the public, but these officers and members of staff have gone above and beyond the call of duty. Our officers often find themselves first at a scene, and if they don't act quickly, doing everything they can to save lives, despite not being medical experts, lives would be lost." The incident occurred in December 2016 when PCSO Neil Parker and PC Way, then a PCSO herself, found themselves at the centre of a life or death drama at Silver Hill. They heard screams and found a man trapped under a bus with only his head visible. As PCSO Way and a nurse tried in vain to find a pulse, PCSO Parker got everyone off the bus and away from the scene, giving the others room to treat the casualty. Knowing the only way to save his life was to release him as soon as possible, PCSO Parker persuaded a few volunteers to grab the side of the bus. PCSO Way shouted, "Lift!" before she and the nurse pulled the casualty clear seconds later. The man suffered serious injuries but survived, thanks to the actions of the two officers and those who helped them perform the rescue. At the ceremony, the now PC Way was awarded the Royal Humane Society Testimonial in Vellum, and PCSO Neil Parker received the Chief Constable's Certificate of Congratulations. And there's a lovely picture there of the Chief Constable, Olivia Pinkney, and the Assistant, or the Vice, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, flanking PC Way and PCSO Parker, who are looking naturally and understandably very proud.
Statue approved of murdered Jewess. Plans have been approved to install a statue of an iconic Winchester woman at the city's Discovery Centre. The tribute to medieval businesswoman Licoricia of Winchester and her son Asa are set to be erected at the site in Jewry Street. When constructed, the 2-metre-tall statue will be placed outside the library facing onto Jewry Street. Licoricia was a member of the significant Jewish community and was murdered in 1277, a killing that was never solved. She was a highly educated wife and mother, and together with Winchester's Jewish community, raised funds for Henry III and Queen Eleanor, as well as a number of national and local projects, including Hyde Abbey, the Great Hall, and Westminster Abbey. Excuse me. In the Middle Ages, Winchester had a thriving and affluent Jewish population, with Licoricia noted as one of the country's wealthiest women, despite a fierce anti-Semitic climate. In 1290, cash-strapped King Edward I was forced to raise taxes, and in exchange for the hike, he issued an edict expelling Jews from England. Winchester Castle even had a tower, called the Jews' Tower, where they were imprisoned. Yet there is no mention of this in the permanent exhibition at the Great Hall, opened in the late 1990s. The invisibility of the Jews is despite one of the major roads in the centre being called Jewry Street. A spokesman for Winchester Discovery Centre said in the plans, "As one of very few statues of women in this country, it will be an inspiration to women, particularly those juggling with work and family responsibilities. And will illustrate the role of education in providing opportunities for women. It will educate people about Winchester's important medieval Jewish community, its achievements and its persecution. It will promote religious tolerance and the acceptance of diversity in the community. The statue will be of national interest and a lasting enhancement to the city of Winchester."
Here are the death notices. Bacon, George Arthur Bacon, in hospital, aged 90. Beard, Mary June Beard, after a short battle with illness. Cousins, Edith Ellen Cousins, peacefully, aged 96. Evans, Barbara Joan Evans, at Westlands Care Home, Four Marks, aged 94. Gunter, Basil Charles Philip Gunter, suddenly, aged 96. Hotchin, Ian Derek Hotchin, peacefully, aged 91. Middleton, Anthony John Middleton. Phillips, Ron S. Phillips, peacefully at home. Stone, Margaret Stone, aged 93, and Travers, Pat Travers, aged 76. And now, please, can we have Christian comment, Daphne?
And this comes from Liz Tatum, and it's headed The Worldwide Quest to Live a Good Life. As I write this, I am a long way from home, travelling here and there and experiencing other cultures. We have found the spirituality of Indigenous people deep and refreshing for our own faith. Finding places to worship on a Sunday has been part of the adventure, and we have been to magnificent cathedrals and also neighbourhood churches. Yesterday, in Australia, was one of those local ones where we found a warm welcome, lively music, the inevitable cake sale, and a rather ancient visiting priest who struggled to find his way around the unfamiliar routine of the people. However, his sermon was straight to the point. He had been listening to a radio programme about secular Britain and how we are missing out on the opportunity that religion provides to bind us together, giving meaning and values, thus providing our ethical frameworks. He acknowledged the depth of the spirituality of the people who once lived without the invasion of Westerners in his now homeland, and how their belief and understanding that they have a personal, spiritual aspect of themselves has endured even as they are pushed off their ancient lands to make way for housing and infrastructure. But then he admitted that organised religion can give cause for criticism, and in his country particularly, the great scandal of child abuse and subsequent cover-ups by those he called professional religious. After condemning those involved, he turned to what is expected of us as Christians, to have the love of God in our hearts and give it to others, and to live a good life. He said that not many of us will do great or magnificent things, but we can all do good for the world in simple and loving ways. We have met people from many nations in the churches we have visited and have seen how the Christian faith has the same message wherever it is planted, even if the worship, music, language and routine are very different. On one occasion, we were fed by people from different nations in cathedral grounds, generously feeding their friends and neighbours. The vast majority of us, religious or not, want to do what this priest said and live a good life. Leave the world a bit better than we found it by following the gospel message of loving our neighbour. We are meeting a lot of that as we go on our journey and have been helped on our way by many. We sometimes find they are Christians of one kind or another and that we have a common bond that does not need to be spoken as we understand that we are called to serve each other. We are looking forward to returning to our Hampshire home soon and adding more to our parish and community life with the experience of our journey.
Now we have letters to the editor. And Maria, can you give us the first one, please?
And the first letter comes from Susan Fairbrother and it's headed Taking the Car. Sir, the number 4 bus serves Highcliffe, Full Flood and Teg Down. A new timetable has come into operation, which, although the people of Highcliffe continue to receive a rudimentary service, those living on Teg Down and in Full Flood only have an hourly service until 5:30 p.m. from the city on weekdays, but no service after 2:45 p.m. on a Saturday, and no service at all on a Sunday. Other areas of the city have a very much more frequent service, meaning they are of more value to the general public. But due to such a limited service on the number 4 route, especially in the areas of full flood and take down, the only people who can make use of it are the free-riding pensioners. So if I want to shop on a Saturday afternoon, it will have to be the car. Susan Fairbrother, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And here's a letter from Martin Taylor weighing in on the bus pass debate. Sir, the letter from Dick Selwood in the Chronicle of August the 30th regarding senior bus passes raises a valid point, but I would go further and make a contribution to the bus pass compulsory rather than voluntary. I would much prefer the existing system to continue, but the reality is that the Tory Hampshire County Council are going to make cuts. HCC already charged for replacements due to loss, so the mechanism for charging already exists. It would be relatively easy to exempt people on benefits, and retaining bus passes would solve the problem of, for example, pensioners needing to take 2 or 3 buses to get to their surgery, as is the case in Kingsworthy. Also, the time taken for all pensioners, the majority of travellers during the daytime, to fork out 50p when getting on the bus will slow buses up considerably. I realise that this would all need a change in current national policy. And Martin lives in Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy.
And now a letter from Andrew Knight. Sir, I am a professor of animal welfare at the University of Winchester and a veterinary specialist in animal welfare. I am writing to express my concern about a current proposal to establish an industrial-scale free-range laying chicken farm on the outskirts of Winchester, as mentioned in the Chronicle, July 12. Such establishments can create a range of animal welfare problems which can be severe. These include inhibition of a variety of normal behaviours that hens are highly motivated to perform, caused by high stocking densities, 32,000 hens in this case. These can be redirected into behavioural pathologies such as feather pecking and outbreaks of cannibalism. Rather than modifying environments and stocking densities, producers have traditionally sought to minimise adverse impacts through beak trimming. Husbandry practices such as beak trimming cause very serious welfare concerns. Although they frequently result in substantial pain, analgesics, painkillers, are not normally used for economic reasons. At the end of her normal laying year, a hen naturally undergoes a dormant period, which is unprofitable to producers. So to shock her physiology into a new laying cycle, a variety of methods are used, for example, water restriction. This is termed induced molting. Poultry may also experience significant stress during catching, which may be manual or mechanical, transportation and slaughter. Injuries during these stages are exacerbated by genetic selection for unnaturally high laying rates, which diverts calcium from bones into eggshell production, leading to osteoporosis. Fractures are not uncommon. I am very concerned by reports that up to 32,000 hens will reportedly be looked after by only 2 full-time staff. It will be impossible to adequately safeguard the welfare of these hens under these circumstances. I do hope Winchester City Council will not allow this farm to proceed. And that comes from Andrew Knight, Professor of Animal Welfare and Ethics, Founding Director, Centre for Animal Welfare, University of Winchester, Sparkford Road.
And the next letter from Erica Hennigan concerns security barriers. Sir, bravo to the City and County Councils for finding and funding a much more attractive solution to security in Winchester's High Street, Chronicle, August the 30th. In these troubled times, such anti-terrorism measures are needed, and I was fully supportive of the temporary, but ghastly, concrete barriers we have presently when they were installed. However, the permanent structures Councillor Warwick has proposed will be a major improvement. I agree with Councillor Ashton that the planters with seating are actually quite elegant. I'm glad to see that they won't disturb the archaeology under the High Street, not interfere with existing utilities. There are too many people in this city who oppose for opposition's sake, but I hope, probably in vain, they just keep quiet on this subject. I just want to enjoy the High Street and feel safe. The new structures will help on both fronts. Erica Hennigan, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Cot death call. So, further to the article in last week's Chronicle on cot deaths and the fact that it's the reuse of mattresses that causes them, I have now obtained the figures from the Office of National Statistics for the last 10 years. Out of 7 million births, there were 2,761 cot deaths. There was only one death in 8,000 for a first baby inside marriage. This figure increased with every later baby and by a factor of 4 for unmarried mothers with a partner living together, by 6 for unmarried mothers living alone with a partner, and by 10 for single mothers. For 30 years I have been with Mr. Richardson from Winchester and other eminent scientists throughout the world trying to persuade the cot death establishment that the mattresses are the cause. But although cot deaths have dropped from 1,593 in 1988 to about 250 now, and antimony, which was added to the mattress on the government's instructions as a fire retardant, is banned, they ignore these facts. At least 6,000 babies would be alive now if they'd had the same chance in life as first babies inside marriage. It's essential that every baby is supplied with a new waterproof mattress. And that letter comes from Peter Mitchell, who lives in Drove Lane in Alsford.
And now a letter headed No Sympathy from Ruth Harrison. Sir, my dear husband died on July the 28th. On August the 2nd, I received a council tax bill for £817.13. On August the 3rd, I had another for £607.90. And on August the 8th, yet another for £239.40. I contacted the council to say I was unable to pay anything as I had to close his bank account and change my saving account and open one of my own. However, no notice has been taken. My next letter in red wants £48.94. On the next page, the sum had increased to £142.18. Adding that if I ignored this, further action will be taken. One asks oneself, where does sympathy come into it? I am 83 and disabled and have no help from anywhere. Being upstairs makes getting around somewhat difficult. My family live in Berkshire and can only manage to come down at weekends. And that's from Ruth Harrison, Trussell Crescent, Week, Winchester.
And next we have Anne Gildersleeve's letter, which is headed Haw Not Needed. Sir, I read the letter from Caroline and Richard York in the Chronicle, August the 23rd. I quite understand their desire for a concert hall in Winchester, especially as they do excellent work helping to organise the Winchester Chamber Music Festival. However, I think we are very lucky in Winchester to have some excellent venues for recitals here. For example, apart from the cathedral, we have Winchester College New Hall and the Music School, Peter Simmons College and St Swithin's School. I am a regular swimmer at River Park and I know many who attend Keep Fit classes and the pool who feel the same, that River Park is easily accessible from all sides of Winchester. I do not want to cycle to Bar End along Chesil Street, which is a very busy narrow road. If it is anything like the timing of Silver Hill, hopefully I shall be dead before it happens. Also, I think River Park could be extended to have an outside pool, as it is so closely situated next to the park. I have very happy memories of taking my grandchildren to the pool in Hitchin in the summer, where their local pool, similarly situated to the one here, has an open-air pool adjacent to the inside one. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross.
And here's Michelle Fox-Rousel asking the question, what ruins? Sir, the letter from Simon Lever is one of several of late in praise of the historical delights of Winchester. By and large, I agree with this, although not with his statement that the attraction of the old Roman ruins and their archaeological significance cannot be discounted. I would like to ask, what Roman ruins? Winchester, or Venta Belgarum as it was then known, was indeed a very important Roman centre, with connections both to Bittern, known then as Clausentium, and Silchester, Caleva Atrebatum. How disappointing it is, therefore, that whilst our museum has some excellent exhibits, so little is to be seen of in-situ Roman remains. Basically, there's one small part of a wall near the river, and wall foundations to later medieval walls. A whole Roman forum is buried under the cathedral, and much more under the Brook Shopping Centre, not to mention Lank Hill's Roman Cemetery. Having visited many Roman sites throughout the country, I think that Winchester is one of the worst in commemorating nearly 400 years of Roman occupation. A great pity. And Mrs. Fox-Rousel writes from St Cross Road in Winchester.
And now a letter from M.G. Lupton, headed Nurture Market. Sir, I would heartily second the letter from Chris Higgins on the Farmers' Market, Chronicle August the 30th. The City Council should nurture the Farmers' Market, which is now a poor shadow of its former self. When it was held on the Middlebrook Street car park, it was dynamic, entertaining and useful to both local producers and consumers. Now it is dull and disjointed, with many stalls not selling farmers' items. If the City Council must join the cycling paranoia and contribute to the profits of the promoting company, why not pick a non-market day and give the market a new lease of life? And that comes from M.G. Lupton, Main Road, Littleton.
And that concludes the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to What's On. The Chisel Theatre Company are performing for services rendered by Somerset Maugham from the 15th to the 22nd of September. It's an extremely interesting play about a family between the wars and how they cope with the Depression and the aftermath of World War I. You can ring the agent's ticket source to obtain tickets on 0333 666 3366. And we've arrived at the time of the year for the Heritage Open Days, from Thursday the 13th to Sunday the 16th of September, when you can get into all sorts of interesting places free. The Hampshire Chronicle has a full list, and here are a few items. On Thursday, the 13th, the Hospital of St Cross has an open day from 9.30 to 5. On Friday, from 1 to 2.30, there's Tudor music and dancing in the Great Hall. And you can see an exhibition of history and heritage at the West Downs Centre, University of Winchester, Downs Road. On Saturday, from 10 till 4 at the Military Quarter Peninsula Barracks, six museums will be opening their doors for free. The Theatre Royal is also having an open day. And at 10 a.m, 12 noon and 2 p.m, the Wainfleet Singers will entertain in the Great Hall. and on Sunday, the Pilgrims' Hall in the Cathedral Close is open to visitors. And at Winchester College, from 2 to 3pm, Dame Jenny Murray will discuss A History of the World in 21 Women. All these items, I think, are free to enter, and there are many more. Winchester will be buzzing next weekend. From the files brings us the historical news, starting with 200 years ago. John?
Yes, here's a sad little piece. Died at Nassau, New Providence, on the 10th of April 1818. After a painful indisposition of 52 days, William Story, Esquire, aged 35, surgeon to His Majesty's forces, serving in the Bahamas, and upwards of 18 years chiefly employed in his profession in the West Indies.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, September the 7th, 1918, and I'm afraid this really isn't any more cheerful. Henry White, Esquire, City and County Coroner, held an inquest at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Monday afternoon, touching the death of William Charles George Cousins, aged 15. This was the first inquiry attended by the press which the coroner had held without the assistance of a jury, as he is empowered to do under the new Act. Frederick James Cousins, of 3 Water Lane, Winchester, private in the Hampshire Regiment, a convalescent wounded soldier, identified the body as that of his son. Alfred Thomas Eldridge, aged 17, of 49 St John Street, Winchester, deposed that at 7:25 on the evening of Thursday, August the 29th, he was in company with the deceased outside a shop at the Bridge Street of Water Lane, when deceased shouted out, "Jimmy!" several times to a man named Tilly, who was walking on the other side of the road. Tilly was carrying a walking stick and turned and ran after the deceased. Cousins ran towards Magdalen Hill and crossing the road made towards Chesil Street, Tilly chasing him, and at the corner of Cheese Street he was knocked down by a car that was coming along the street.
Well, in a slightly lighter tone, 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 7th, 1968, and the first item, up to 962 of Hampshire's 1,283 dairy farmers could be using inefficient milking plants, it has been revealed by two national surveys conducted by the Milk Marketing Board. Research showed a faulty milking plant could add as much as half an hour to milking time, causing mastitis and leave permanent damage to udders. The first survey, carried out in 1966, showed 8 in 10 plants were faulty, and although over half were repaired before the last survey, 7 in 10 plants again needed attention. And the second item. In 1968, excavations on the Cathedral Green have thrown new light on last year's interpretation of the ground plan of Old Minster, the Saxon Cathedral of Winchester. Mr. Martin Biddle said at a public lecture in the Guildhall last week. Mr. Biddle, director of the Winchester excavations, was giving the last of a series of lectures scheduled for the 10-week dig and chose to speak on the latest finds. Illustrating his talk with coloured slides and diagrams, Mr. Biddle showed the massive and unexpected chalk foundations uncovered to the west of the old Saxon Minster. Shaped like a double apse, this discovery added substantially to the previous tentative interpretation of a cathedral church with a single aisleless nave east of St. Swithin's tomb. Although the present Cathedral Green site is to be filled in this autumn, Mr. Biddle suggested that what had been excavated so far might be only about two-thirds of the cathedral in the final form to which it grew.
And here we are at the edition dated Friday, September the 3rd, 1993. That's 25 years ago. The New Age travellers living on campaigner Alfie Cole's land at Micheldever have been given 14 more days to stay on the site while their champion prepares a legal appeal. Mr. Cole and 12 travellers named on the injunction obtained by the City Council were in Winchester County Court again last Friday to overturn an eviction order due to come into effect last weekend. But after Mr. Cole's solicitors dropped out of the case at the last moment, Judge David Griffiths granted the landowner a 14-day stay of eviction notice to give him time to instruct a new legal representative. Mr. Cole said, "We've done very well today. The judge has been very good to all of us. He's given us 14 days for us to come back and make our appeal. All of the people currently on the site can stay until then, but if anyone else comes on, then I'll be off to jail." He also claimed a major victory after the judge removed the names of 12 travellers from the injunction, making him the sole party in the ongoing struggle with Winchester City Council. The travellers themselves were delighted by this outcome and praised the fair-minded attitude of Judge Griffiths. They were also confident that no other travellers would land their champion in trouble by moving on to the site. And the second piece from that edition is about Winchester College. Excellent sixth form exam results have put Winchester College at the top of the league table, but the headmaster claims it's the college's good all-round education which makes it one of the best independent schools. Winchester College, which celebrates its 600th anniversary next year, was top in the league table for A and AS level results, with 60% of pupils achieving A grades. About 50 of the 124 boys who took the exams are to go to Oxford or Cambridge universities. The college was ahead of St Paul's School London in second place and Westminster School London in third place. Headmaster James Sabin-Clair said, "Naturally, I am very pleased that the school has done so well again. I don't set much store by the competitive league tables, which are by and large invented by journalists. Schools like ours, with good, qualified staff and good resources, ought to do well in terms of exam results. But more important is providing the best source of education for intelligent pupils, and this means more than just working for exams." He admitted that the league tables did give the college favourable publicity. "The fact that you do well in exams means that you continue to attract good pupils and staff," he said. "And this creates an atmosphere within the school of working hard. Doing well in exams is an assumption, so the situation, with any luck, is perpetuated."
And now we come to editorial comment, please, Maria.
And this week, editorial comment is headed, "A statue that will be a warning from history." Every day, thousands of people use Jewellery Street in Winchester. Most probably don't give the origins of its name a second thought, and it is often misspelled as Jewellery Street, J-U-R-Y. Our news story on page 2 highlights the efforts by members of the local Jewish community for a statue to be erected portraying Licorisia, one of the forgotten important people of Winchester's past. In the 13th century, she was a successful businesswoman, a moneylender at a time when Jews were forbidden from many other professions. Jewellery Street was the heart of the Jewish quarter, with a synagogue roughly opposite where the United Church stands today. Licorisia, along with her Christian maid, was murdered in 1277, stabbed to death. The killers were never caught, nor probably ever sought. A few years later, King Edward I, having extorted most of their wealth, expelled the Jews from the country. They were not allowed to return until Oliver Cromwell lifted the ban in the 17th century. Anti-Semitism is often in the national headlines, and it is sobering that this city today, largely a place of peace and tolerance, had such a shameful episode. it is right and proper that Licorice will be remembered, even honoured, on Jewellery Street, in the heart of the community where she lived. It will also be a warning from history, even from as far back as the 13th century.
And on to first person, please, John.
Yes, and it's Ron Allison's turn to entertain us this week. His piece is headed The Brilliance of Eric and Ernie. It was not until the BBC drew my attention to it last weekend that I realised it was 50 years since the Morecambe and Wise show was first shown on television. The two comedians had appeared on both radio and television during the years before, of course, but on September the 2nd, 1968, they came into our lives and stayed there in a way that had not happened previously. For years, the two had toured the country with their double act, at times topping the bill, but from that evening until their final show, the 1977 Christmas special, they were part of the lives of millions of families. Indeed, whether or not friends said they'd had a good Christmas seemed often to depend on how much they'd enjoyed the Eric and Ernie. Forget the turkey. The pair worked together perfectly. In fact, they never made it seem like work. There was never the remotest suggestion of either one seeking to upstage the other, and with other famous personalities almost waiting in line to make a guest appearance, there was always a freshness to every show. Just think of Andre Previn and Angela Rippon, to name two who come immediately to mind. And certainly, there was always laughter. The guests all seemed to enjoy the show as much as any audience. Talking of the show to the Times, the impressionist John Coleshaw said, "Eric and Ernie brought generations together and joy to many. Their lovable brilliance is something we've never seen the like of since. I look back on their programmes with enormous admiration and such happy, warm memories." Well, I can't improve on that. When Eric and Ernie left the BBC, they joined ITV. But their greatest years were those spent at the Television Centre. And I know I'm only one of many millions grateful to those involved in the production of these wonderful shows. The past weekend was also the anniversary of two other events far removed from television comedy and of far greater significance. 100 years ago, the First World War came to an end. Then, just over some 20 years later, Europe was again involved in terrible combat. Thoughts of that Second World War are still fresh in the minds of many alive today, together with our fervent prayers that there will never be a third. My own maternal grandfather was killed in action in 1915 when my mother was 10 or 11 years of age, and although she seldom spoke of her dad, I know that she had her personal memories to hold on to. When I did my national service, I was posted in the army to serve in Germany, and I learned later, Mother was desperately concerned that I might come home with a German girlfriend. I did not, so all was well. Finally, a thought on our delightful county. Over the weekend, 5 days in fact, Sky Sports covered the fourth test match between England and India from the Aegeus Bowl just outside Southampton. It's an attractive ground, and when the sun shone as it did, and the skies were just about cloudless, which they often were, and the trees just moved slightly in the breeze, which they did, it all seemed to say, "Come to Hampshire. It's lovely." Which, if you live here, you'll know to be true. No PR person could have designed a better commercial.
And here is the alternative look at the news, Belgarum. And the first bit is entitled, "Don't Forget Your Seat Belt." It's a slick social media campaign. Would look more at home in a general election than a by-election in the Upper Meon Valley. Last week, the Liberal Democrat candidate for the City Council seat, Lewis North, posted a short video on Twitter to introduce himself to the voters of the ward. In it, he raises issues such as motorcycle noise and curbside glass recycling. However, on the issue of road safety, Mr. North, who grew up in Cheriton, gets into his car and starts driving without putting on his seatbelt. Although it appears he's driving on a private driveway, Belgarum would remind Mr. North that as soon as he gets onto the public highway, he could be landed with a hefty fine. As the slogan goes, think, always wear a seatbelt. And there's a picture of Mr. Lewis in his car, and yes, you can't see a seatbelt on him. The Upper Meon Valley by-election takes place on Thursday, September the 20th. Standing against Mr. North will be Conservative Hugh Lumby, June Kershaw for Labour, and Andrew Wainwright for the Green Party. The by-election was triggered by the resignation of Conservative councillor Amber Treslr, formerly Councillor Thacker. We go on to overbearing. Critics of the new Chesil Lodge scheme on Chesil Street highlight the way it supposedly looms over the street scene. But the photo that they have above here, taken in Middlebrook Street, shows how the white building, built as a cinema in the 1930s, dwarfs the Victorian terraced houses. It is nearly double the height. Was there an outcry at the time from people who said the city is being ruined? Probably not. The passing of time has softened its impact, so much that most people will barely give it a glance. The same will probably happen on Chesil Street too. And finally, shedding light on Augustus. It only took a few hours for Belgarum's request about information regarding one of the names on the war memorial in Micheldever to be answered. Augustus Ludwig Brandt stood out among the English names. Nick Dennis emailed, "There is almost certainly a connection to Bill Brandt, one of the most famous photographers of the 20th century, who did a lot of work for Picture Post in the 1930s and 40s. He came from a Hamburg family of merchants with strong ties to England. Bill Brandt lived in England from the 1920s, and I think I have read that his father had a large house at Micheldever. Brandt produced a series of nudes called Micheldever Nudes, the backgrounds of which presumably show the interior of this house, but I do not know where it is." And Dorothy Jones points out the entry in the Commonwealth War Graves Commission's website. Augustus was a flight sergeant in the Royal Australian Air Force and died in a raid over North Germany in April 1942 at the relatively advanced age of 30. The lighting up times. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 7th of September, at 6:28 a.m. and begins again at 7:38 p.m. On Wednesday the 12th of September, it ends at 6:35 a.m. and begins again at 7:26 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. So I'll go over to Maria, please, for the first one.
And this is a letter from Westminster written by Steve Bryan. "Last month's argument about Boris Johnson and the burqa annoyed me. No one wants to deny free speech. A debate should be had about the role of the burqa, or niqab, in our society and how it fits with British values. My point, and the reason I criticised Boris, was he could have started that debate without insulting anyone. Not for the first time, the substance got lost because of a throwaway line, and people can make their own minds up why he chose the letterbox line. Furthermore, the former Foreign Secretary could have used his newspaper column to do what he's failed to do since leading the Leave campaign in 2016. Tell us what his Brexit plan is. The Prime Minister and the government have one, and I support it. Here's why. The Chequers agreement has its critics, but it represents a fair-minded compromise. And that would be the right thing to do, whether we'd had, as we did, a close result or not. In that referendum, the largest democratic exercise in our history, the British people voted to leave the EU, and we will. The compromise we are putting forward honours the result of that referendum and maintains the constitutional and economic integrity of our United Kingdom. It also sets us on course for a productive relationship with our closest trading partners, while freeing us to trade with the rest of the world. And you saw a really positive take on that with the PM in Africa last week. Yes, there are some in both parties who want shot of the EU. One leap and we're free. But it's not that simple. And is, I think, untimely self-defeating. Ultimately self-defeating. We've been a member for over 40 years of a club it took us 11 years to negotiate our way into. The idea we can simply walk away in March like a divorced couple with no children who never speak again is wrong. Yes, we will leave. Take back control of our money, laws and borders. But we won't turn our backs on our friends across the channel. I don't call that hard or soft Brexit. I call that good sense. The next 6 months will be defining. I have no crystal ball, but I suspect it will go to the wire, and President Macron will ultimately decide whether the EU itself compromises and we have ourselves a deal. Of course, Britain would survive and prosper without one, but it would be a big mistake for Europe because of the inevitable impact on the long-term partnership with the UK. As I said in 2016, I don't share the negative mindset view that our country is doomed and small, no longer relevant. In trade, Britain is punching above our weight, but below our potential, and as a result, is ranked mid-table in international exports as a proportion of GDP. Brexit provides an opportunity to change which can be great for local firms. We're told Nigel Farage is back on the road with leave means leave, but like others, he's still armed with only lazy slogans, not answers to hugely complex areas of policy. The Chequers agreement is not perfect, but it's the job of government to do the heavy lifting. That's what is happening here, and in the end, I will support a deal that respects the referendum result and puts practical reality for our economy and our country over theoretical, dreamy ideology. Steve Brime, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Spectacular send-off for Legion's £1 million man, Norman. Hundreds came together to celebrate the life of a respected World War II veteran. More than 300 people from across the country attended the Wessex Vale Crematorium in West End on Saturday for the funeral of Norman Brown, who has died aged 91. Royal British Legion members, borough councillors and dignitaries attended the funeral. Mr. Brown had been the backbone of Hampshire's poppy appeal for more than 20 years and was the president of Eastleigh Chandler's Ford and District branch of the Royal British Legion. He served with the Royal Engineers in France and Belgium during the Second World War and was given the post of county coordinator for the poppy appeal in 2003. In 2009, Mr. Brown was made MBE for his service to Hampshire's Royal British Legion, which he had joined in 1992. In 2009, he was invited by the Queen to a garden party at Buckingham Palace. Mr. Brown's long-standing good friend Paul Capper said, "I just wish he'd seen through our last joint project together, that of the unveiling of the new war memorial in Eastleigh. But I know he'll be watching down on us." Eastleigh MP Mims Davis described Mr. Brown as a true gentleman who was absolutely committed to bringing our local community together, particularly in service of our veterans and servicemen and women. Councillor Paul Bicknell, Deputy Council Leader, said, "Norman was a gentleman, loved, admired and respected by a huge number of people. Norman's work of many years has touched many people and he will be hugely missed." Mr. Brown also joined the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service as a retained fireman in 1953 and left in 1981. He leaves one son, five grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. And there's a lovely picture there of a long funeral parade in honour of Norman.
Thief targets the purse of woman, 91, in Waitrose store. A man is wanted by police after a 91-year-old's purse was stolen in a despicable incident. Officers have released CCTV images of a man they want to speak to after a purse was stolen from an elderly woman in Chandler's Ford. The incident happened at around 11 a.m. on Wednesday, the 25th of July, while the 91-year-old woman was shopping in Waitrose, Oakmount Road. A man followed her around the store, making attempts to look in her bag. He followed her into another aisle, and when she wasn't looking, he stole her purse. He made off with the brown leather purse, which contained a bank card, bus pass, driving licence and cash. PC Alex Fortune said, "This is a despicable incident where an elderly woman has been targeted. Not satisfied with the £100 cash that was in the purse, he then went on to use her bank card in three different stores." And that's accompanied by a fairly clear CCTV image of a man, the wanted man by the police.
Proposals for Silver Hill 2 archaeology to be revealed. Archaeologists are returning to Winchester for public dialogue over excavations in the centre of Winchester. The hidden history under the city centre will be aired at a series of events in the autumn. The events, to enable people to hear more about the Archaeology Advisory Panel's report and recommendations. The panel was asked to look into the potential discoveries under the area of Silver Hill 2, also known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR. The work is controversial, as many local people want the council to make a permanent display of what is underground. The Archaeology Advisory Panel, led by Professor Martin Biddle, who led digs in Winchester from the 1960s and 70s, said it would be preferable to leave any artefacts undisturbed. Members of the Cabinet CWR Committee approve plans for a number of events that will be designed so people can understand the recommendations from the expert advisers. At a public meeting, the panel will present their report findings and recommendations. This event will help people learn about the science behind the report and to understand the guidelines and policies that inform practices of archaeology today. Small seminars will be held for an invited audience of people who submitted specific comments on archaeology during the CWR consultation. At these seminars, people will be able to discuss their thoughts in more detail and ask questions of the panel. These will be smaller events to enable two-way conversations and more detailed information to be discussed. There will also be a session with the Cabinet, Central Winchester Regeneration Committee. Council Leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell said, "This mix of events will give people of varying interest and knowledge the opportunity to find out more, share their thoughts and understand how the advice from archaeology professional experts will be at the heart of future developments. And there are two pictures here, one of the area, Silverhill 2, which is due to be redeveloped, and also one of the 1967 dig, which was led by Professor Martin Biddle.
Care team receive award. A group of Winchester nurses were set to meet Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan after winning a national award. The children's community nurse team at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital were named the most inspirational health team in the 2018 Well Child Awards. They were due to meet the Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry, patron of the charity Well Child, at the Royal Lancaster Hotel in London on Tuesday, September the 4th. The team comprises 9 specialist children's nurses led by Wendy Green. As well as praise from a consultant paediatrician, the nominations received by Well Child included praise from parents. Parents explained how nothing was too much trouble for the nurses, constantly going above and beyond the call of duty and working long hours whenever needed. 2 team members stayed in their own time to attend an emergency christening of a child whose condition was deteriorating quickly, because the nurses had been a major part of his life. They were also nominated by a consultant paediatrician who worked with the team and described them as a fantastically dedicated, caring and skilled group of nurses. Karen Hamblin, whose son was looked after by the team, said, "Sam loved them. Their fun and caring manner meant that he would rush to greet them whenever they came to the house."
Meeting will discuss plan for 6,000 homes. Campaigners are set to hold a public meeting soon in their battle against a new town of 6,000 houses in the Hampshire countryside. The owners of the Sutton Scotney estate are proposing the scheme on farmland east of Mitchell-Dever Station. Last week, the Chronicle revealed that agents for the Magnier family are promoting the land as a site for housing as the City Council reviews its local plan. The Diva Society campaigning charity is organising a public meeting to share information and is calling for new members to join the group set up when the threat of housing first emerged in 1990. It said, "We have never been opposed to housing development, so long as it is the right kind of housing, in the right scale and in the right place. We believe that 6,000 houses is completely inappropriate at Mitchell-Dever and it will wipe out our thriving rural community. We need your help to ensure that we are ready to fight this next battle. Over the last few years, our community has grown, and many residents may be unaware of this ongoing threat to our rural area." The meeting is due to be held in the coming weeks on a date and venue to be announced. A new town at Mitchell-Dever Station was first proposed in 1990 by the then landowner Eagle Star Insurance and then Zurich Insurance. The family of John Magnier, the Irish bloodstock multi-millionaire, has suggested the site following a call for sites by Winchester City Council. The Magniers bought the Sutton Scotney estate a couple of years ago for a reported £45 million from Zurich Insurance. The proposed site this time is smaller, lying south of Blackwood, east of the mainline railway and west of the A33. A council spokesman said, "Earlier this year, the council issued a call for sites to scope all potential land to be considered for development through the local plan process. Over 200 sites were submitted and they are currently being evaluated as part of this process as the council rolls forward its local plan to 2036. We intend to publish the Strategic Housing and Economic Land Availability Assessment, that's SHELAA, by the end of the year, listing all of the sites submitted for consideration.
Village fate steps back 100 years. The Byton fate visited the past on Sunday as it explored how the village looked 100 years ago. Marquees and gazebos were decorated with Union Jack bunting, and there was a special display of maps from 1911. The usual fate attractions were there too, with plenty of games for the visitors to play. A falconry display from A Fistful of Feathers, llamas from South America, and various dog competitions added to the interactions on offer. Robert Ellis, one of the organisers for the fete, said, "There was food and drink aplenty. The wonderful cream tea, sponsored by the British Cream Tea Society, sold out. The barbecue sold out, and the bar was nearly drunk dry. We also had a vintage Austin 7 display. The proceeds from the events are thought to be in the region of £4,500. This will be split equally between the village hall and the parish church." And there are several pictures to go with this article. One is of a very young boy, Nicholas Matthewson, wearing a falconry glove. And on it is standing a magnificent bird of prey. There's a photo of the dog show and Tim and Terry Crowfoot with their llama, Mary Ann.
Landowners braced for illegal hare coursing. Farmers and landowners are expecting an early seasonal rise in hare coursing, with the CLA urging the police to make tackling the crime a top priority. Hare coursing is a rural crime where dogs are used to chase, catch and kill hares, with gambling on the outcome common practice. The Fur Cup, an illegal hare coursing event, is reported to have prize money of £6,000 and is organised secretly on WhatsApp, according to Thames Valley Police. The crime becomes more prevalent at this time of the year, following harvest, when large areas of arable lands are cleared of crops, making it easier to travel across fields. The CLA is now urging the police to do everything possible to stop the practice and arrest those caught in the act. CLA Regional Director Robin Edwards said, "Every year following harvest, farmers and landowners across our region brace themselves for a rise in hare coursing. We appreciate that police have a range of significant pressures, but we want to ensure that tackling hare coursing remains a priority. It's a misconception for people to think this is a minor crime in the countryside. Those involved in hare coursing are hardened criminals, often using threats, intimidation, and in some cases violence against anyone who questions or challenges their actions."
And now, after Byton's show, here's an item about another show. It's back. The popular Alresford show returned on Saturday, with thousands of people flocking to Titchbourne Park to enjoy the sunshine and celebrate farming and the rural way of life. Once again, the foundation of the show was the livestock, with cattle, sheep, pigs, poultry and heavy horses. This year, participants also attempted to break a world record, and to make a 4-metre-tall papier-mâché elephant. The entertainment was plentiful, with several activities for children and dozens of stalls. From agricultural machinery to handmade gifts and crafts, livestock equipment, plants and local produce, there was something for everyone. The event was organised by the Alresford and District Agricultural Society. Main organiser, Val Watley, praised the success of the show. She said, "It was fantastic. We were blessed with the weather and it went very well. The crowds seemed to enjoy themselves all day and we had the most livestock the show has seen in years. The donkey derby was loved and the vintage parade seemed to go on for ages. All in all, it was very successful. Without the volunteers, we wouldn't have been able to do it. They were a vital part."
Historic pub artefacts will be on show at a Winchester pub later this month. The Association of British Brewery Collectibles are holding a meeting at the Full Flood Arms, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, on Saturday, September the 22nd. Between 12 noon and 3 p.m., members of the public are invited to bring along items of Breweriana for appraisal and valuation. Items of interest include old beer bottles, bottle labels, old bottles, jugs, mirrors, and all types of brewery advertising. Anyone with items unable to come along can contact David Taylor, Chairman ABBC, on 01202 980 299, or email david.dralled@talktalk.net.
And from the sports pages, here's news of a local sporting hero. Adams to retire after 16 memorable years. Hampshire cricket legend and St Cross Simondians batsman Jimmy Adams has confirmed he will retire at the end of the season. He and fellow left-hander Sean Irvine, who've scored 34,992 runs between them for the county across all formats, revealed their decision to retire within 24 hours of each other last weekend. Born in Winchester, 37-year-old Adams made his Hampshire debut 16 years ago and has excelled both as player and club captain. Adams has played more than 450 matches for Hampshire, including 19,601 runs across all formats, including 27 centuries and 108 50s. He and Irvine have been an integral part of several one-day triumphs in recent years too, winning 50 over trophies in 2009 and 2012, whilst also contributing to two T20 titles in 2010 and 2012. A four-day title as skipper also came along in 2014, when Adams led a strong Hampshire side to the top of County Championship Division 2, securing promotion to the first-class top tier, where they've remained for the past three seasons. He also played throughout Hampshire's successful Royal London One Day Cup campaign this year, before being left out of the final. His greatest year was in 2010, when he made 1,351 first-class runs and 668 runs in the T20 Blast. Adams, who lives in Twyford, said, "When I watched the game as a youngster, I had hopes and aspirations to play for Hampshire, but I never thought I'd have the honour of representing this wonderful club for the last 16 years. I've made some great friendships and shared some fantastic experiences in that time, and I'm immensely proud of what the club has accomplished. But I feel the time is right for me to hang up my boots at the end of the year and allow others the opportunity for success. From everyone at the club to fans, friends and family, the support I've received throughout those 16 years has been incredible. I still have a few games in me to finish off this season, and I'm looking forward to these next few weeks, where I'm sure I'll have the opportunity to thank you all and look ahead with excitement to the next chapter." And Jimmy's currently playing in the match against Worcestershire and is available for the next three other county championship fixtures that remain.
Hyde Dig finds to go on public show. Artifacts from the last known resting place of King Alfred will go on show to the public for the first time next weekend. The items were found in community digs on the site of Hyde Abbey. Next week, as part of the countrywide Heritage Open Days festival, pieces of medieval tiles and intricately carved Norman masonry from Hyde's Lost Abbey are set to be displayed for the first time in Winchester city centre. The finds, discovered during April's Hyde 900 community archaeology dig in gardens on King Alfred Terrace and lifted to protect them for the future, were all once part of the vast Hyde Abbey, which was demolished in the 16th century as part of the dissolution of the monasteries. They include 12th century carved stones and unique pieces of beautifully decorated encaustic tiles, and will be exhibited in the Cathedral Inner Close from September the 13th to the 16th. Also on view will be the magnificent Norman arch discovered during last year's Hyde 900 dig, which has attracted international attention and will be having its first public outing in central Winchester next week before it is removed to permanent display in the City Museum. As part of the Hyde 900 Group's mission to bring Hyde's ancient abbey to life, they will also be running tile-making workshops in the Cathedral Close throughout the 4 days of the exhibition. The making of medieval encaustic tiles was a celebrated art involving many elaborate designs, and visitors to the Heritage Open Days can have a go at making some themselves. People can book to take part in the workshops via www.hyde900.org. Also, during the Heritage Weekend, Hyde 900 will announce its programme for this year's King Alfred Weekend Festival, that's October the 25th to the 28th, featuring Dr. Simon Roffey from Winchester University, who will give a lecture on What Did the Monasteries Ever Do for Us? David Sperling, event organiser, said, "The Heritage Open Day will give visitors the chance to appreciate the superb skills of the masons working on Hyde Abbey. The quality of the stonework on display, carved in the Norman period and through to the major rebuild of the abbey in the first half of the 14th century, underlines the importance of the abbey over this period." And that's accompanied by some photographs, a very worn stone head, which was found in 14 King Alfred Terrace's garden. There's a medieval encaustic tile, a miniature head, which is about the length of a thumb, and a couple of very young children sifting through various items, taking part in the Hyde 900 community dig.
New artwork at bus station. A new mural to celebrate the Winchester district has been unveiled at the city's bus station. The final design, created by Beth Gibbs, a second-year fine art student from Winchester School of Art, highlights the role of the bus station in connecting the district with the centre of Winchester. The chosen piece was voted for on the council's social media pages by the local community and the Central Winchester Regeneration Community, selecting the most popular from the three possible options. Funding for the work was made possible through a cultural innovation grant from Winchester City Council, and the mural is the result of a strong history of collaborative working between Winchester City Council and Winchester School of Art. The bus station has been rejuvenated by the City Council after its purchase last year. When the central area is redeveloped in the Central Winchester Regeneration, the bus station is suggested to relocate to the Middlebrook Street car park with access off Friars Gate. A planning development framework for the area was recently approved, and there is a picture of Beth Gibbs' painting. And it includes images from Kingsworthy, Winchester Town Centre, Arlesford, Bishops Waltham, Wickham, Twyford, St Cross and Hursley.
Night Shelter Celebrations. It's 30 years since the Night Shelter was founded back in 1988, when various buildings throughout Winchester were used before permanent premises were established in Jury Street in 1997. The Winchester Church's Night Shelter charity is celebrating its 3 decades on September the 8th. It's grown over the years with some 260 volunteers and has been awarded the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. The Night Shelter provides more services than their name would suggest, and has recently expanded to provide move-on accommodation as a step towards independence when their residents are ready. This means that they accommodate 25 people at any one time in 3 different locations. Michelle Price, the Night Shelter manager, said, "Homelessness can happen to anyone, and over the last 30 years the Night Shelter has grown and evolved enormously. As the reality of homelessness has changed and become more and more complex over time, so have the needs of those experiencing homelessness and the way we respond to them. 30 years ago, the shelter was only open during the winter, offered a basic level of food, with camp beds in one room. Today, we're an almost 24/7 service, providing a huge range of support to our parents. And there's a picture there of the outside of the night shelter, which really is one of Winchester's hidden jewels.
Now, here's a short item headed Silent Movie. Winchester's Hat Fair is looking for people over 60 to take part in a short film. The UK's longest-running festival of outdoor arts has been running a project to celebrate the stories of residents, specifically the over 60s. 12 local people are needed to create a short silent film and treasure box full of Winchester's best stories. People will need to be available for 4 filming sessions in October. The final film will be showcased on Saturday and Sunday, December the 8th and 9th, at an undisclosed venue in Winchester. To find out more, contact Amy Pendry, Hatfair Engagement Producer, at amy@hatfair.co.uk or call 01962 844 600.
And there's a picture with the next article of the Winchester Rotary members on Mount Snowdon looking very wet and cold. Snowdon climbed. A group from the Winchester Rotary Club have climbed Mount Snowdon to raise money for the Winchester Hospice. Despite the poor weather, the climbers completed the trip from base to summit in 6 hours. Their trip was extended when they were told that they had to climb down to the base rather than return by the train service, suspended due to the severe conditions. The group followed the railway lines back to the bottom, meaning an additional 3 hours were included in the trip. Donations total over £5,000.
And here's the third of 3 reports of annual shows going on around the city this last weekend. Sun-kissed crowds at the annual Littleton Show. Sunshine graced the fields at the Littleton Recreation Ground on Saturday as the Littleton and Hairstock Show welcomed its highest ever attendance. The stalls and activities taking place attracted record numbers, a suitable celebration for the 97th anniversary of this annual show. Crockery smashing, ferret racing and even a flight simulator were amongst the attractions put on show for visitors. And just like every year, the competitions were judged throughout the day. Talented artist Gemma Wootton displayed her striking wire animals, giving the animal section a bit of a twist from the ordinary. And the long-standing tradition at the show of the dog Gymkhana saw speedy pooches race through the obstacle course. A crowd favourite this year was the performance from the Spitfire Sisters. The 1940s-style trio took to the stage and performed songs from the Second World War period, equipped with only saxophones and their voices. And there's the usual range of really lovely photographs that accompany that article, with all sorts of people having all sorts of fun and games, including one very enthusiastic couple taking a photograph of some tomatoes.
Basics Bank hits 2,000 family mark. The Winchester Basics Bank have served food to over 2,000 families in the last 12 months. Across the 2,000 families, 13,900 days' worth of food has been distributed. Regular food donations from Sainsbury's, Waitrose, Tesco, Co-op and Able & Cole have helped make this possible. Clients are often referred to the Basics Bank by local welfare organisations, such as the City Council. Winchester Basics Bank operations are funded solely by donations from churches, schools, community groups and individuals. Customers are usually referred by agencies such as the Job Centre or Social Services. People can just drop in, but they will not get 7 days' worth of food. And that's accompanied by a picture of smiling volunteers with bags bulging with donated food, which they are putting into a car ready to take off to the Basics Bank.
2 months of roadworks set to begin in Village. Drivers are set for 2 months of traffic misery as works to replace gas pipes in a Hampshire village have begun. Traffic lights are in place across Fair Oak for the next 8 weeks as gas distribution company SGN will be replacing old mains and services with new plastic pipes. This comes after emergency repairs were carried out at the junction of Fair Oak Road and Winchester Road in the past few months. The area is now set to see traffic lights once again as the new works will be carried out in Winchester Road outside the Acorn Social Club and will progress south in sections to the junction of Fair Oak Road. SGN said engineers will also work at Winchester Road Junction with Fair Oak Road by the War Memorial and in the pavement. Mohamed Gias Udin Sumon, manager of Kuti's restaurant, has endured emergency gasworks on the pavement outside the restaurant for weeks. He described news of the further works as frustrating. For months, people have assumed that the restaurant is closed because the gasworks have been taking place on our doorstep. It has been a problem. It is not clean, and we have noticed less custom.
Africa Talks. Winchester adventurer John Pilkington will be giving a series of talks starting this month about his latest expedition to the Horn of Africa. John spent 5 months travelling in Eritrea and Ethiopia, partly on foot and with a donkey, retracing the route of a Victorian rescue mission of the 1860s. He says, "Of course, much has changed in 150 years, but off the beaten track I found ox ploughs and mud and thatched houses which those Victorian rescuers would have instantly recognised. It was history and adventure combined." And John's talks take place on Friday, September the 21st, Thursday, October the 4th and Friday, October the 12th at the Discovery Centre on Jury Street, starting at 7:30 p.m. John's talks are always extremely popular and quickly sell out. Tickets are available at £12 from the 182-seat venue on Jury Street itself or online, and also from Oxfam Books and Music on Parchment Street. And all proceeds go to Oxfam and WaterAid.
Ratings for food and cleanliness at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust have scored highly again. These results were shown in the recent patient-led assessments of the Care Environment Inspection. The Trust runs three hospitals in the county, including the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. In the annual inspection, the Trust was awarded a score of 98.8% for cleanliness and 90.9% for food quality. Julie Mascary, Chief Operating Officer at the Trust, said, "The patient assessor's findings on cleanliness and food are very good, and they reflect the huge amount of effort everyone at Hampshire Hospitals puts into creating a positive all-round experience for our patients. Patient feedback is a vital tool in making our services better, and I am extremely grateful to all of those who took part in the assessments, which will also help us to identify potential areas for improvement."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet, and when you put your label inside, please make sure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.